Rookie Fever, the show that looks closely at NFL rookie values all year long.
Let's go! Let's get this show going, man.
Hurry up, hurry up!
The Rookie Fever Podcast.
We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it,
baby. Let's go. Wait, see.
Hello and welcome aboard the hype train, Rookie Fever, bound for rookie profile number 8. Before we leave the station, please be sure you are in your seats and have your tickets ready for validation. It's time to depart. I'm your engineer, Mike, the Feverish Finero, and helping me arrive in our destination today is the QB guru, Mark Schofield. You can find his written work on USA Today's Touchdown Wire, and of course, on Twitter at Mark Schofield. You can also find him here tonight on the Rookie Fever Podcast. Mark, I could barely get through that after tweaking it from our flight we took last year. Mark, how the hell are you?
I'm doing well, buddy. I'm doing well. It's great to be back. And I get the sense it's going to be a little bit of a different discussion than we had last year.
Yeah.
It's a different rookie class, that let's put it that way. You know, it's going to be an interesting one from the quarterback standpoint. Really, it's going to be an interesting one overall. I saw prior to the Super Bowl, Daniel Jeremiah, who does such great work for the NFL Network, and he came out and said, just overall, you might find like 7, 8, 9, 10 players from last year's NFL draft, all of whom would go before anybody in this class. Like, it's just you talk to people in and around the league. You talk to other people that have been studying these prospects. I was having a discussion about the wide receiver group. And it's good, but like, they're all like wide receiver 2 types.
Yeah,
like,
I hear you.
It's there's one position where it's like, yeah, this is the top guy. Tyler Linderbaum, the center from Iowa. Like, he's the top center in the class. Like, done. Every other position, literally, whether it's receiver, quarterback, tight end. You just don't know. You just don't know. And maybe the combine starts to shake things out a little bit. We'll see out in Indianapolis, you know, in a couple of weeks now, how everything goes from there. But it's a lot of what ifs and what could be's in this group. And particularly, Michael, the reason I'm here tonight, the quarterback position, it's a lot of question marks.
Profile edition.
I picked a train this year instead of a plane because I feel like we were flying high on those 5 rookies from last year. And I figured I pick a train so we can try to hype train this up a little bit more. I'm not trying to artificially do that though, Mark. I need you to be honest. So before we get into this, let this explain to the listeners in case they missed profiles from last year. Usually profiles are on one rookie and one rookie only. This one's different. We have Mark Schofield. So we're going to talk about the actual 2022 QB rookie class. So every player that we think is relevant for the rookie drafts in Superflex in particular, you guys are going to ask yourselves a lot of questions right now. You're going to be like, is this the rookie class where I need to like pick a wide receiver or even a running back and just forget about these quarterbacks at the 102, the 103, the 104? Mark is like shaking his head. Yes, yes, yes. We will dig into it. Here we go. We are going to play matchmaker, Mark. We are going to match 6 QB traits with 6 quarterbacks. There can be repeats. I left your favorite one from last year, competitive toughness, on here. So if you do struggle with any of these, if someone doesn't really show competitive toughness and you think they don't qualify for one of these traits, just tell us. Starting off with most complete quarterback in this class, the most complete QB in this class, Mark.
I mean, this is a tough one, Michael, in the sense that there are two guys that I think are the most complete.
Okay.
You know, Kenny Pickett from Pittsburgh, who I think is probably, you know, the most complete guy in this class in terms of, you know, what he was run, what he has seen, you know, how he plays the position. I think if you're looking at like the most complete pro ready guy out of all of these 6 that we're going to talk about that could theoretically start week 1, Pickett's that guy. I think, there's a lot of what he did at Pittsburgh, you know, that showed he can run an NFL offense. He can work through progressions. The only guy I think is on that tier is Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati. Hmm. Now, Ridder has a flaw that we can get to that is one of those non-negotiables in my mind. I think to be a good quarterback in today's NFL, especially as a young kid coming out of college, you need two things. You need accuracy and you need some sort of pocket management, movement, mobility, however you want to. And that's a lot of nebulous stuff there, but you've got to be able to protect yourself. Sure. You don't have to be Lamar or Kyler.
Yep.
You've got to at least be Burrow, right? Like yep. You've got to be able to protect yourself. If you're a guy that can't move, and we might have one in this group of six we're going to talk about, you might be in trouble.
Extend
the
other plays. One
is the accuracy point. Mm-hmm. And Ridder tends to miss on throws. Now, they do seem to be early in games. Nate Tice, who does great work for The Athletic and Bleacher Report, he was Russell Wilson's backup at Wisconsin. Like, he knows the quarterback position really well. Nate talked about recently in one of a big board drop that Bleacher Report had that, look, yeah, the misses come early in games. And I think for large part, that's true. But I always have a little bit of a – you know, my defensive guard comes up when I see a quarterback that's missing throws because yeah. You've got to put the football where it needs to be, when it needs to be there. And if you can't do that, that's going to be a problem. But Ridder has the other stuff. Like, I'm about to do a video breakdown of his game against Houston, and you can see him reading rotations of safeties. You can see him from a game, I think it was against South Florida, get into that backside dig where just like sort of Matthew Stafford in the Super Bowl, like, reading the concept, coming back, hitting that backside dig road. So those are the two. I'm kind of cheating here, and I'm going to let myself do that because of this class. But Ridder and Pickett are the two that I think, Okay. Yeah, they're the most complete. The problem is Ridder has the inaccuracy issues. And as I hold up my hand, Kenny Pickett's hand is roughly the same size. Like, right. We're going to be talking about 9 inches Indianapolis. Like,
oh, wow.
He's sub 9 inches
wow.
in terms of hand size. Like, I've been told it's like 8 1/4. Now, he has a double jointed right thumb.
Yep.
And so that's why he did not do the hand measurement at the Senior Bowl. Like, he's been doing stretching exercises and things like that, so they can actually get him to put the hand down and get a measurement on him. But I think it's still going to come in at maybe at 9. That's really small by like NFL standards. Now,
I think when they were giving Kyler a hard time, his was like 10 and a half, right?
I mean, I think
I could be like wrong.
Jared Goff, for example, was, I think, 9 1/4.
Okay.
And Goff is like known as like the small hands guy.
Okay.
And so if we're talking about a guy that's going to come in maybe at 9, damn, that's dicey. Now, what I always say about hand size is then go back to the film. Does he fumble the football? Does he struggle with throws and you think it's coming out of his hand funny? Does he struggle in weather? And in college, you don't really see that with him. He does play with the glove, but everybody that was down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl, that those days it was rainy, he struggled with the bigger football a little bit. So the hand size then is going to be an issue with Kenny Pickett. And so you asked me for the two complete guys. I give you Ridder and Pickett, and there are issues out of the gate. So
yeah,
there you go, Michael.
Wow, we're starting this show off on the hype train for sure.
That train is already derailed, my friend.
So competitive toughness. This is one of your favorite. This is something that you learned is underrated at the quarterback position that you tend to gravitate towards. Is anyone showing you competitive toughness?
There are two that really flash with me, Malik Willis and Sam Howell. Malik Willis, there are going to be a lot of comparisons made with Willis to Josh Allen, to Trey Lance, guys that are like, all right, look, is he a complete product? Is he a finished product? Absolutely not. If you've got 2 or 3 years of patience from a developmental standpoint as an organization, from an ownership at a dynasty league, like if you've got patience, this might pan out. The fear with Willis is he had a great Senior Bowl week and he's going to get pushed up to the board where in an ideal world, Willis comes off the board at 32 to the Detroit Lions. Where it's like end of the first round, they get that 5th-year option, but they don't have to feel the urge to play him right away. They got Jared Goff. They could take their time. But if we see Willis come off the board at 2 to Detroit or some of the other teams in the top 10, the micro quarterback, then he's going to get rushed onto the field and you have some concerns because he needs that sort of developmental window. But But from a competitive toughness standpoint, look, you might not find better splash plays than the two-point conversion he had where he's bouncing off multiple defenders, reverses field like twice, and somehow, some way, finds somebody in the back right corner of the end zone. Like, he gets beat up sometimes behind that offensive line, gets right back up. So he checks that box, and Sam Howell checks that box too. And what's interesting with Howell is going into this year, it was Spencer Rattler and it was Desmond and it mm-hmm. was Sam Howell yep. and Desmond Ridder too. Like, those were the three guys that were like, yeah, these are the ones we're hoping and really excited about. Matt Corral, yeah, a little bit. Malik Willis, yeah, a little bit. But yeah, people were really excited about Sam Howell. He has a 3-interception game against Virginia Tech, and people jumped off the bandwagon, got off the train, so to speak. Quietly, he got better as the season went on. Remember, he lost Javonte Williams. He lost DME mm-hmm. Brown. He yep. lost Michael Carter. Like, he lost a lot of talent, and he got better as the season went on. He became a very good runner, a very competitively tough runner in the open field, would take defenders on. So I think those two guys check that box.
All right. Let's see if we can choose one guy for.
And I've been cheating here. I've been cheating.
It's all right. It's all right. We're getting more information. That's not cheating. We're getting more information. So arm talent. Straight up. Oh, he's laughing again. This is a real struggle for you, isn't it?
It's a struggle because I can't decide between the two.
Okay. Give me two
Carson
again.
Strong and Malik Willis. Carson Strong and Malik Willis have the best arms of the bunch. Strong has an absolute cannon. Malik Willis, ball just pops out of his hand. I think, look, I'm going to give Willis the edge here. Okay. People that were down in Mobile that saw him throw live, they said the ball just came out differently out of his hand than everybody else. Strawn had a little bit of struggles, particularly when it got rainy and windy. Willis was able to cut through that. So I think Willis has the best arm of this group.
Nice. Safest bet. These are for our super flex drafters and rookie drafts. Safest bet. If I have to pick a quarterback, I don't have enough on my roster. I just want a guy that I know is going to start. Like, maybe not day one, just to start. Like, he's going to be an NFL quarterback. He might only be a QB2 for me. He doesn't have the upside of the five QBs from last year, but you know what? It's somebody I can put in my super flex spot and feel pretty good about.
I'm going to say Pickett.
Okay.
This is a really tough one because this is why, like, you really got to pay attention to fits and landing spots and draft capital that gets expended. But assuming we'll say, for the sake of argument, all these guys go in the top 20 mm-hmm. of the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. The one I would feel safest about, regardless of situation, would be Pickett. Because I think, you know, they're all talented in their ways. Like, I think all of them could be a starting quarterback in the NFL. But I think the guy that's probably got the easiest glide path to that is Kenny Pickett.
Okay, good. Getting a feeling that Kenny Pickett is your QB1 in this class?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't finalized grades. Sure. He's the one I feel most comfortable about.
Yep.
I mean, Ridder and Willis are sort of in the mix.
Okay.
Strong, a lot is going to depend on medicals. I mean,
sure.
We're out in Indianapolis. Like, the most important place, the combine for him, is the medical tent. Mm-hmm. If that knee checks out, he's got QB1 sort of talent around him. But right now, he can't move. Like, I forget what game it was, but it was late in the game, fourth down situation. It's 4th and 4. He's trying to scramble for it, and he's got nothing but grass in front of him. He couldn't get there, Michael. Like, the knee is a problem. He's got a history of knee injuries. He's got, like, screws in that knee. Like, now Jordan Palmer, his private quarterback coach, has been telling people, like, the knee's fine. It's going to check out fine. Like, it's not a degenerative condition. Like, yeah, he was told he could probably sit out this year, but he wanted to play one more year, and it should check out fine. And if it does, you might feel a little bit better about him. But that's a big red flag for me. Willis needs the developmental curve. Matt Corral, we haven't really talked about him yet. He's going to face a huge adjustment from the offense that he was running. Ridder, I've mentioned the accuracy concerns. Howell, I just think, is like, he's a decent prospect. Pickett's the guy I feel safest about.
All right, so we're going to go from safest to biggest risk.
I think it's Willis.
Yeah, right.
Just because, like, there's the developmental stuff that has to happen. Like, he might be, again, that boom bust guy where, in an ideal world, like I said, he slides to, like, Detroit at 32. There's no rush to get him on the field. But if they take their time with him and get it right, you can nail it. But if he goes, like I said, Detroit at 2, where they're on the clock, or you know, Carolina, I think they're picking at six.
Right.
You know, and they feel the need to get a quarterback. They're going to have to get him on the field early. Like if he slides maybe even to the teens or Pittsburgh at 20 and they can say, look, you know, we can take our time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could work. But if it's early where they feel they got to get on the field, I'm a bit wary of that.
Highest reward. Quarterback with the highest reward. So now I'm in that super flex draft and I pretty much need a QB, but I could just wait till next year, but I can pick any guy I want right here. And I just want to pick the guy that gives me the best shot of being good. Like, you know what I mean? I don't want an average guy. I want the one guy that has that upside.
Like if you're just going to swing for the home right. run, particularly yep. from a fantasy perspective, you'll take the shot on Willis.
I thought so.
Because
biggest risk, highest reward.
Yeah, because if he pans out, when you add, like, he could be Jalen Hurts, like, on steroids. Like, and because he has the athleticism, he will give you the rush in numbers. And then, look, you know, if he figures it out, he's got a better arm. Like, he's working with Quincy Avery. Quincy's working with both Jalen Hurts and Malik Willis. Like, there's going to be some similarities there. If you're going to take that swing and just say, look, I'm swinging for the fences here. It's Willis, might be the boom bust guy, but if you're willing to take that risk, or you're in a situation where you're pretty set at quarterback, but you've got the luxury of just mm-hmm. taking a flyer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Willis.
There you go. All right. We're done with matchmaker. We're going to dig into some general questions. I have four general questions about the class, and then we'll move on to three questions on five QBs that you and I have selected. If we squint hard enough, will we see more than three or four quarterbacks go in the first round of the NFL draft? Last year, we saw five go in the top 12.
I feel like we're going to see three.
Three.
Yeah. I think we're going to get Pickett. We're going to get Willis. And I think we get one of either Corral or Ridler. You know, I think Strawn is going to slide because of the medicals. I think Howell probably slides out of the medicals. And so I kind of think we get three, maybe four, if a team just says, look, you know, a team trades back into the first round with like Detroit or, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. some other team. Like, look, we want to get that fifth-year option. Might squeak out four, but I think it's a three kind of year.
How far down does this class fall in comparison to last year's class?
Sitting here right now, I would probably have all five of the guys that went in the first round ahead of all these guys.
Like, absolutely.
Whoever QB1 is QB6 last year. I mean, I think it's kind of that way. They all have questions. Whereas last year it was like, yeah, there are questions, but they're not the extent of this. And, you know, in talking to other people, like a lot of people have said, look, I might not have a first round grade on any of these guys. Seth Galeen at Pro Football Focus had a fantastic tweet earlier this week where he's like, all of these QBs are QB3. Like there's no QB1 in this class. There's no QB2. Like they're all QB3. When you start getting to like QB3 in a normal draft, it's like Paxton Lynch. Yeah. You got a lot of questions about this guy. Like maybe you could put it together, but you're just not quite sure about it. This is just not that kind of class. And it's really in a sense, like I talked about a little earlier, like it might not be that kind of class in a number of positions. Like you've got a lot of NFL contributor types, not a lot of NFL top level starter types. And it's true at the quarterback position as well.
Is there a QB that you maybe are just looking at a little harder than maybe some other people are talking about them? Is there somebody like off this radar a little bit that you're like, you know what, who, I don't know if I'm taking a flyer as an NFL team late and these other quarterbacks are going way too early because they're the only names out there. I'll take a shot on this later guy.
I mean, you know, I said this last year, I tend to be that like, oh yeah, day three quarterback guy, right? Like right. I was Mr. Brett Rippin. I still think Brett Rippin could be a great NFL quarterback. I will die on that hill gladly. Bailey Zappe from Western Kentucky. He put up ridiculous numbers at Sam Houston State, sort of an FCS level school. Then that coaching staff went to Western Kentucky. He went there as a graduate transfer. I think he broke Burrow's touchdown mark from his last year at LSU this year. Broke some other records as well. Just absolute video game numbers. He might ultimately be that like QB2 in the NFL, but there's something about him. I like the aggressiveness he shows, the way he reads concepts. And I know that there are believers in reps, right? There are believers in, look, the more reps you have thrown the ball, the more battle tested you are in the college game, you're going to be ready. Nobody throws it more than him. Like, I think he had like 60, 65 attempts at a game a couple of times this year. Like,
wow,
he's throwing it a ton. And it was the same offense he was running at Sam Houston State. So you're talking about somebody that over the course of his college career has had a lot of dropbacks and has a lot of, you know, reps by that sense. And so he's somebody that I like. Caleb Ellaby from Western Michigan, somebody that, look, should have gone back to school. Like, he's like a redshirt sophomore, like, should have gone back to school. But there's a reason he came out. He can spin it pretty well, moves pretty well. He had an interesting game against Michigan, you know, went into the Big House early in the year before people knew what Michigan was going to be and played pretty well. And in terms of that competitive toughness, like, they're down 40 in the fourth quarter and he's out there doing everything he can to, not that they were going to come back in that game, but to try to make it close. So he's somebody that's got a good arm, good athleticism, pretty accurate. You know, he's got, I think it's Sky Moore, the wide receiver that he was throwing to. A lot of people are excited about him. You'll tune in to watch him, but you'll come away kind of impressed with what he did.
Sky Moore is a badass name for a wide receiver.
Yeah, it's and I think it's like SKYY.
Oh my God, I love that name.
SKYY Moore.
I also love that I asked you that question. I wasn't expecting that kind of content out of that question. I almost skipped it, which would have been completely foolish.
Sky Moore, 12 games this year, 94 catches for 1,283 yards, 10 touchdowns.
What school?
Western Michigan.
Okay, wow. I missed that Ellerby went to Western Michigan. That's why I had to ask about Sky Moore.
So, look, you came for QBs, you're getting some wide receiver stuff. Sky Moore from Western Michigan.
That just tells you how good this quarterback class is that you're getting wide receivers.
Yeah, we pivoted to wide receivers, Michael.
All right, so last year you were really kind of – you had some positive things to say about no combine because I think you were able to dig into your process a little bit more. You weren't traveling as much. The combine's back. Are we happy?
Yeah, in a sense. I mean, partially from a personal standpoint, you know, knock on wood, my plans don't have to change or anything. I'll be out there at Indy.
Yeah,
because I didn't, you know, do the combine last year.
Right.
You know, did it 2 years ago. And it's good because – this would be my first travel since COVID and everything.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so it'll be good to see friends in the industry and things like that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but I do think that, like, it's good in the sense that we'll get some news. We'll get another look at players. We'll, you know, people will be at the JW Marriott and they'll be talking about things. And, you know, I was at the JW Marriott with the Boston sports media contingent.
Nice.
And I know I told this story last year, but it was like, it was a wake because it was like Brady's leaving.
Yeah.
And so we knew before it was going to come out that, yeah, you know, Brady's leaving New England. So you'll get some of that. We might get some Aaron Rodgers stuff. We might get some Russell Wilson stuff. And so
very cool.
I think that part of it is cool. You'll get to see Jerry Jones and his huge, you know, travel wagon thing that it's got the big star on the side and he parks it outside of St. Elmo's. And, you know, it is a fun time. So I'm excited about it. It's good to have it back. It's a little bit of that sense of normalcy that a lot of us have been missing.
Yeah. And then a break from something. It's always nice when something's back. I feel like 2 years of combine, you'll be like even more down on it. And it'll be like, oh, I have to do this again. But
I mean, I might be down on it by like Wednesday afternoon. If you get me wrong, I might be ready to come home. But like sitting here right now as somebody that's been in these four walls with my wife and our two kids, like working from home, and you know, the kids are in school now, but last year was a hybrid thing. And obviously the year before that, it was mostly virtual. I'm looking forward to Indianapolis in March. Let's put it that way.
Nice. I hope you have a great time. We are done with the general. Let's dig into these quarterbacks. We chose five. We're going to ask three questions about five quarterbacks. We're going to start off with Kenny Pickett. Pickett had a very good 2021 season at Pitt, leading them to an impressive win over Clemson, Tennessee, and its first ACC championship. Are you concerned at all that virtually all of his college production occurred in his remarkable senior year?
It's a concern in the sense that, like, yeah, you know, is it a one-year wonder? Is he a late bloomer? Is he tapped out? Like, did he need everything to be perfect around him? And so there's a concern from that point, you know, but I do think also he's done some work. Like I know Tony Rossiope, his private quarterback coach, and they've been putting in work and it's starting to pay off. And, you know, you could say something similar about Joe Burrow, right? Like Burrow, his junior year started to sort of come on late, had the Fiesta Bowl. And then, yeah, you know, that senior year, they win the national title. You know, we've seen some late bloomers that have had success. We've also seen some guys that were like 1 year wonders, like Mitchell Trubisky, who had 1 year as a starter and now he's a backup. I mean, so there is a little bit of hesitation from that perspective, but putting a positive spin on it, I think it's just the work has finally paid off. And so I think there's, it's not a clear cut negative in my mind. I know some people are going to look at it and say, look, I don't trust it. And I get it. But from where I sit, I don't think it's that big of a negative.
Fun fact too. While I was looking up Kyler Murray's hands, which are 9.5, by the way, Joe Burrow's are only 9. Burrow has 9-inch hands. I was amazed. I don't remember that really coming out.
Didn't get the kind of buzz that I thought it would. I mean, people were just kind of like, oh, it's Joe Burrow. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like it just kind of moved on from it.
Right. I found that interesting. Just learned that myself. So I think you answered this question. So if you feel like you did, we'll skip it. But do you believe his senior year breakout was more of his ceiling or just him getting started?
I think it was more just him getting started.
That's what I felt like I got from you.
Yep. Yeah, there's still room for growth. Yep. I don't think it's like, look, he's capped out. This is it. He's done.
Right.
Like, I think seeing him sort of work through concepts and work through things, he's got a good arm. Not great, but you can add to that. So I think there's still room for growth. I don't think it's like the Mac Jones discussion last year was, has he already hit his ceiling? Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's already shown Mac has it. Like, yeah, there's still room for growth there. And I think it's the same with Pickett.
At the Senior Bowl, Pickett had a solid but, you know, unspectacular practice week. What do you think that he has to show throughout this process, combine, pro day, to improve his draft stock? What does he got to show us?
Got to show us 9-inch hands. I mean, that might be the easiest thing. But no, I think what he has to show is that there won't be floors, lows, crater in situations.
Consistency.
Like, consistency is what he's got to show, right, Michael? Like if he comes out of this pro day and it's a solid, too effective, too efficient, people are going to like it. He's going to go and check the boxes. Like,
got it.
Because people are looking at him like he's the safe guy in an iffy class. Like he's the warm blanket, the hot cup of tea, like whatever safety, security blanket you want to go to at the end of the day. That's what he is. So he has to be steady Eddie throughout the way. If he has a bad combine, he has a bad interview, like that could be bad. But I've been told, and it's probably, again, not a surprise because I know Tony, like he was great in interviews. He was great in whiteboard sessions. He was fantastic meeting with teams down in Mobile. And so he's probably on his way to sort of checking all those boxes. He just has to be consistent as we go on.
Yeah. And honestly, like if no one's going to really, really impress, maybe that's, you know, all he has
to do.
That could
be a ticket to being one for him. Yeah.
Just don't do anything wrong. So a guy that we haven't talked about a lot up till now, because he didn't fit any of the matchmaker game, Matt Corral. Questions are already starting and we're already hearing as the process evolves, his size, is he going to hold up in the NFL? If he weighs like, I don't know, in at 195, like, is that going to be like a major concern for you and NFL teams?
It'll be a concern for NFL teams.
Okay.
It's not so much of a concern for me right now. There's a bigger concern, which is the adjustment from what Lane Kiffin asked him to do to what, you know, Nick Sirianni might ask him to do, or to what, you know, Ron Rivera in Washington might ask him to do. Like, can he run sort of your more standard NFL offense? The size thing isn't a concern for me because I think, you know, he's got a good frame to him. He's solidly built. Like, he's muscular. Like, you've seen pictures of him out of his uniform. Like he looks put together, so I'm not concerned about it. But I think teams might shy away from it, particularly when a quarterback like him might have to rely a little bit more on the run game, on his athleticism, might get exposed to hits. It might be a concern for teams. Some teams do have sort of measurable thresholds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, does he hit those teams that do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch these guys nearly as long as you do, which is why you're on the show tonight. But I keep hearing about his size. You know, like I feel like anytime I look into him at all, that's a big question for him. Was the offense that he ran at Ole Miss maybe too simple compared to the NFL, what the NFL might ask him to do?
him and Malik Willis are going to face a big adjustment getting to an NFL playbook. Okay. I mean, that's the big thing with Matt Corral. Like, you watch his offense. Like I said, I'm doing a I've done videos on him. Matt Waldman and I are going to sit down for a video on him tomorrow on Wednesday. It's a lot of orbit swing, like simplified concepts. And it's Lane Kiffin's offense. Like, the stuff that's usually getting open downfield is stuff that gets schemed open for him. And so, yeah, he's going to face a big adjustment coming to the NFL.
All right, we're going to move on to a name that came up quite a bit in the matchmaker game, Malik Willis. Yeah. How do you think Malik will transition to a pro-style offense in the NFL? I think you just kind of hit that, didn't you? You labeled him as kind of the same issue.
There's going to be that developmental curve. Like, it's, again, a lot of simplified concepts, you know, a lot of, like, fake screen, throw the seam ball. And even on some of those, like, the results were mixed. And so, as I was talking about earlier, Michael, like, he's going to face that developmental glide path. It's going to be a bit different than some of these other guys, like, you know, Ritter and Pickett. And, you know, even in a sense, you know, Sam Howell, they may face easier adjustments. The reward, the payoff, if you're patient, could be huge.
Right.
We've often seen NFL teams lack in that patience. Maybe, you know, the 49ers are setting an example with Trey Lance that, you know, another organization might follow with Malik Willis. And if they're patient, you know, they could be rewarded for that. But yeah, he's going to face a tougher glide path.
I was also reading that he was by far the fastest QB at the Senior Bowl. And I believe maybe even ever. I don't think they've been clocking this that long for all fairness, but he obviously has speed. And he, if anyone, did impress a little bit at the Senior Bowl. Did his stock go up as we commented about Corral's by not being there? Might have gone. Did his stock go up at the Senior Bowl? I mean, is that fair?
I think it did. And look, they clocked him with the Zebra Technologies chip at 20.58. like, during a practice, 28.58 miles per hour, which is fast. Like, right. That's legit speed. And like you said, it's the fastest from a quarterback since they've been tracking that stuff. But they've only been tracking it a couple of years.
Right.
He also had, look, like, some of his throws were hitting like 75 miles an hour, which, again, is eye-popping. Josh Allen was at like 66. Which was the fastest previous. And so, and Pickett had some throws that were up there too. So, you know, he deserves some credit. But yeah, look, Malik Willis is a tremendous athlete. And, you know, that will certainly serve him well. And I think because of the week that he had, he certainly helped himself. Like, there are websites that sort of track mock drafts, and not that mock drafts are the be all and end all. Like, sure. We're all throwing darts at a dartboard.
Yep.
But you can see Willis just have the spike.
Okay.
And, you know, it was like 11, 17, 19, 24. Like, yeah, that's where it was. Now you're seeing him inside the top six. Like, there are mocks where he's coming off the board at six now. And so he certainly helped himself, given that rise in how mock drafts and, you know, mock evaluators and people on the outside are doing it. So a lot of people, not everybody, but some people are talking to teams and getting feedback from people with teams.
That's what I was just about to say. Like, just like you're going to do at the combine. A lot of these people that are creating these mocks are just hearing and just bouncing off of they hear into their mocks.
There are people, whether it's like the Matt Millers of the world, like Mel Kiper Jr., Jordan Reed, Todd Boucher over at ESPN. Like, they're hearing from teams, and this is reflected now in the mock drafts we're seeing. You're seeing guys rise as a result of it.
All right. So I think with a lot of athletic quarterbacks, and especially athletic quarterbacks in this class, which isn't also, you know, that fantastic, he's got speed, he's got upside. We're only going to hear about those two things. Can you tell me a little bit about his arm and his accuracy?
I mean, his arm's an absolute cannon. Like, there is not a throw that he can't make. Like, he can make every throw to every level of the field with velocity. Like, he checks that box. Accuracy is a bit more of a work in progress. Like, there are some throws that he just misses high. And I don't know why. Like, I don't know if it's a mechanical thing, if it's just a release point thing. So the accuracy, the ball placement is a bit more inconsistent than some of the other guys in this group, but it's similar in a way to Trey Lance, where it's like, yeah, you know, he's missing some throws, but the arm is an absolute cannon. He's an incredible athlete. Like you'll roll the dice. Like a team talked themselves into Josh Allen at 7. A team talked themselves into Trey Lance at 3. A team's going to talk themselves into Malik Willis.
Sure.
They'll look at the arm, the traits, the athleticism, and say, you know what? We can fix it. We can figure it out. I was talking to a recruiting director of player development for a big Power 5 school just this week about these quarterbacks. Is he was doing some work on them, you know, just from a curiosity standpoint. And he said, look, you know, if I were recruiting this guy now, my first question would be to our QB coach, can you fix it? Can you put it all together? And any QB coach is going to go, yeah, I can. So you're going to see Malik Willis come off the board early because they're going to look at those traits. They're going to look at guys that have figured it out, like Allen, like Lance, and say, yeah, we can do it too.
Nice. So we're going to move over to Sam Howell now. And as you mentioned earlier in the pod, he lost a ton of weapons, lost Williams, lost Carter. Is that making him a hard evaluation?
It makes it a little bit of a harder evaluation, but it also, I think, gives you a look at something you might not see perhaps from others, which is, how's he going to look like in our system? You know, this year was bad. Wasn't great. A little inconsistent. Prior year, when he had NFL talent, looked pretty good, right? And so now he's going to come out of that situation into a situation where he's got NFL talent around him like he had 2 years ago and maybe put up some good numbers again. And so I think in a way it kind of helps the thought process. It makes it a tricky evaluation because you're looking at this year versus last year and you're saying, well, did he regress? Were there struggles? He had to change his game a little bit. He was their second leading rusher, or if not their leading rusher, like ran for, I think, 700, maybe 800 yards, like added some stuff to his game that he didn't need to do the year before. And so I think that's impressive as well.
That was like a huge surprise, right? That 800. Yeah,
I did not see that coming, Michael, at all. Like, I joked earlier in the year with some people, like, he might be running back one. Like, yeah, QB1, he's RB1.
So I learned something new. At the Senior Bowl, they clock spin rate now. And apparently he had the highest spin rate by far at the Senior Bowl. This is new to me, like I said. Meaning to you, spin rate?
I mean, it gets you to, like, can the throws cut through weather, velocity, wind, things like that. Like, and I think it's a worthwhile measurement. Like, I'm somebody that's a lot of the stuff that I do is film-based. But if you have information at your disposal, you're dumb to ignore it. Like, whatever data point you have, like, use it, figure out, like, does it have some meaning to it, and then apply that knowledge. And I think, you know, how the ball pops out of his hand matters, especially when you start thinking about scheme fits, because I think Howell is probably your, like, West Coast / air raid, like, quick game kind of guy. If the ball's popping out of his hand like that, certainly it helps downfield, but it'll help in the short area as well. And so I think it's a worthwhile data point. And I think I'm curious to see going forward, like, you know, 1 year, it's okay, interesting, cool. Like, if we continue to track this and it matches up with guys that might fit one offense versus another or have success versus don't, that would be really interesting.
So I asked you before the show, there's four quarterbacks that I wanted to ask you about. And I said, is there a fifth? And you said, yes, I think there's a fifth. And you said Desmond Ridder. Why did you want to add Desmond Ridder after I gave you the four names before him?
Because I think Ridder has some of the stuff down from a mental perspective that NFL teams are going to love. I know that, like, I've mentioned the accuracy, the ball placement, and the concerns that I have from that standpoint. But I think the teams are going to see the experience. Teams are going to see the leadership, like getting the team to the, you know, the national championship playoffs. Teams are going to see how he read out coverages, how he read out spun safety looks. And they're going to say, look, he's got most of what we need. The accuracy stuff we can fix. We can figure out a way to fix. Now, I'm more of the mind that, like, you're either accurate or you're not. Mm-hmm. Like, and if you struggle with accuracy at the college level, I'm not so sure you can always get it fixed. There are examples. Dak Prescott, though, was a guy that was, I had the same concerns about, and it's the reason why I wasn't a huge Prescott guy. He certainly fixed it. Like, you can fix this stuff. And so I think teams will like a lot of what they see. It might not be a fuller picture like it is with Pickett and others, but I do think that there is going to be a team that's going to see this stuff and say, I like it. We could fix the accuracy, and maybe it's just an early game jitters thing like Nate Tice thought about. And if so, you might get the guy. Like the Bleacher Report people, the group over there, they have him as their QB1 for a reason. And you know, there's something to him that people like.
I think it's funny, like in evaluations, like you said, I think I'm in the camp with you. Like if you're not accurate now, I don't know. In the NFL, when it's more like everything's coming at you faster and it's more difficult, I don't know how accuracy is going to improve. It's kind of the same way, like when wide receivers come to the NFL and they're like, well, you know, they don't have great hands. I always like, but it's like, that's kind of important.
Yeah. It's the same thing with quarterback. Like throw the football where it needs to be, when it needs to be there. That's a job.
It feels like that's a job. I'm sorry. I always find it funny. He jumped from 18 or 20 touchdowns to 30 his senior year. What did he do right in 2021?
I mean, Cincinnati was a very good team. Okay. Cincinnati was a very good defense. They have two corners, Cody Bryant and Ahmad Sauce Gardner. That Gardner's might go in the top 10. Bryant's probably a day two guy, but two very good corners. They had very good defense, so we had a lot of favorable situations. But he improved on his accuracy. Like it was worse.
Wow. There you go.
So he was there's, you know, if you want to say like there's room for hope and growth and optimism, the jump from junior to senior year in terms of accuracy and ball placement, it's there. Like it's documented on film. And so I think that part he got right, coupled with yet one more year of, all right, I know what they're doing when they're the safeties line up like this. And he's one of the guys in this group that does show you him and Pickett, they can get through progressions, him, Pickett and Strong, really. Get through progressions, get to the backside dig, get to the third read, get to the check down. Like he can do that stuff too. And so I think that sort of jump from junior to senior year, as well as some of the other stuff he's done and their defense giving him some short fields, that's why you see the jump in production.
Gotcha. Well, I like that we added him in then. I definitely like that we added Ritter in. So we're going to jump over to landing spot reactions. I have four QB landing spots for you, and I just want to get your reactions. Kenny Pickett to the Broncos.
I think that could work. You know, obviously that's a team from an NFL standpoint that is pretty put together.
Very put together.
Denver.
You said Kenny Pickett was maybe the most ready.
Yeah. Pretty put together. Now you can hack it in Pat Shurmur. Like that's a pretty good head coach, offensive coordinator to sort of work with. So I would like that fit. Like,
okay.
Denver's a pretty good landing spot for any of these guys, really. Okay.
All right.
But I think Pickett would work in Denver. Yeah.
All right. Good, good. Sam Howell to the Saints.
I like it in a sense. You know, I would imagine that conceptually that offense is going to be somewhat similar to what we've seen in years past, obviously.
Right.
Look, with Sean Payton's retirement, like, you know.
Who knows?
You got Pete Carmichael coming in. You know, he's spent some time with Sean Payton. Like he was with them for, you know, as an offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, like he's okay. Under the Payton tree.
Okay.
So that offense is going to be West Coast influenced, which, as I said, that's kind of where I think Howell is best suited. And so I think, yeah, there's a lot of other issues with the Saints right now. They got cap considerations. Like, they're up against it from that point. Like, you get the whole Taysom Hill thing. Like, maybe that finally goes away with Payton gone. But I think provided Carmichael is going to have that sort of and Payton's offense, to be fair, like, it evolved over the years. Like he showed an ability to adjust the offense. But I think Carmichael's going to have sort of that West Coast element to it, which I think is a good fit for Howell.
Matt Corral. To Washington. Ooh, that one's not hitting you nice.
Yeah, that one's, I think conceptually it could work. Turner's done a pretty good job with some space and concepts, some quick game concepts, some vertical shot plays molded in. Like, you know, I could see it working. You know, my major hesitance with Matt Corral generally is just that developmental leap that he's going to have to make from Lane Kiffin system to whatever he's running in the NFL. Now, Turner's done a good enough job, so I think it could work. It's just not giving me the full-on warm and fuzzies that the first dude did.
I definitely wasn't seeing warm and fuzzies. You guys can't see him, but I wasn't seeing warm and fuzzies.
Yeah, Michael saw me wince out of the gate on that one.
I do love doing this with you though, because you're super open-minded to it. I don't pull these out of my you know what. I do look at some mocks and kind of see like where these guys are potentially going, and so they're you know semi-relevant. But this one I'm going to let you pick: Malik Willis to the Panthers or the Steelers. Which do you like more? Malik Willis to the Panthers or the Steelers?
I kind of like him more with the Panthers.
Okay.
You know, Matt Canada, I like a lot of what he does, sort of pre-snap motion, movement, shifting, and all that stuff with Pittsburgh. But Ben McAdoo, I think for all the jokes that were made when he was the head coach with the Giants, he knows football. He knows offense well. You know, does he have a proven record of quarterback development? That I don't think he really checks. But rooted in West Coast stuff, quick game stuff, getting the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly, maximizing yardage after the catch. I think that's a nice starting point for Malik Willis. You know, get him some spacing concepts, some spot concepts, some slant, flat, drag and hank, all that fun stuff to get it out of his hand quickly. Just let him read one side of the field, which is a lot of what the West Coast does. It's very similar to what Burrow and Zach Taylor do. You get to the line of scrimmage, you've got your man beater to one side, your zone beater to the other. You don't have to tell me whether it's cover four, cover six, cover three, quarter, stubby stump. Is it man or zone? If it's man, you're throwing left. If it's zone, you're throwing right. And McAdoo does a good job of that. And so I like Carolina as a fit for Willis, but better than Pittsburgh.
All right. We're going to let you fill in both blanks now. This will be the last one. Give me your favorite match, quarterback to team. Favorite match.
I like the idea of Kenny Pickett at Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I like that idea. I think he would fit well with what Matt Canada wants to do. I think he can push the ball downfield there. Now, a lot of it was Roethlisberger. It's like, look, he could throw your goes along the sideline. That was pretty much it. But I think you could do some of that with Kenny Pickett. I think you could do some of the underneath stuff that they want to do. You've got obviously the foundations of a run game built in that he can sort of draw upon. He's played in Pittsburgh, the weather, the elements and all that stuff. I don't think are going to be an issue there. And so I know Pickett to Pittsburgh is a common one that's bandied about. I like it a lot. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Good. I'm glad I asked that last one. It was not on my show sheet. Mark, I could talk football with you all night. I'm not going to do that to you. You have
I got nothing else to do, Michael.
Another
20 or so.
But I do want to thank you very much. Please tell everyone where they can find you, your content. I don't know if I hit everything on the open. I'm sure I didn't. You're everywhere. Just tell them anything you need to on the way out that you want to promote.
Well, Michael, it's always a blast, man.
Thanks, Mark.
Hope to do this again sooner rather than later. You can find me on the Bird app at Mark Schofield, USA Today's Touchdown Wire, a bunch of different SB Nation websites, the Bleeding Blue. Big Blue View, excuse me, Bleeding Green Nation, Pat's Pulpit, Blogging the Boys. I pretty much got the NFC East and the Patriots. It's a weird little thing. You need to get me over to Hog Heaven or whatever the Washington football one is, because I got to round out that NFC East. Right. Matt Waldman and I do a show together each week, the RSP Quick Game, although it was a pod. I think now we're going to start doing more video breakdown stuff. Cool. We're doing a Matt Corral video this week. But
very cool.
On the Bird app, Michael, at Mark Schofield.
Nice. Thanks again, Mark. And thank you, our listeners, from everyone at Rookie Fever, Swags at Swagzilla0G, and of course, myself. Thank you. We appreciate you. This is the Rookie Fever podcast. Please do not forget to rate and review. And please, please do not forget to be awesome.
How much I love you. Never know how much I care. And when you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. Rookie fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever. All through the night, sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call my name, and you know I'm gonna treat you right. Rookie fever. Me, fever when you hold me tight.
the one-on-one scouting is never done. This dude be throwing runs. I told you anyone size and speed just on real innings, but not ideal. Wait, what's this breakout? A full rookie fever stage.
Romeo loved Juliet. Juliet, she felt the same. When he pulled his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my flame. Now we give a fever. When we kiss it, fever with our flame in you. Fever, I'm a fire. Fever, yeah, I burn for soon.
Got the fever, cause I got the fever, now you got the fever, so she got the fever, and he got the fever, no cure for the fever, so let's feed the fever, thank God for the fever,
thank God for the fever,
now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever, now you got the fever.